Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
This episode is sponsored by mParticle. mParticle believes that better data results in better decisions and better outcomes. mParticle can cleanse, visualize, and connect your customer data from any source or system to any API. Postmates, NBC Universal, Spotify, and Airbnb use mParticle to accelerate their customer data strategies. Visit mParticle.com to learn more.
This is Allison Schiff, and on the podcast this week, we have Larry Adams, CEO and founder of LVA, an anti-racist agency. What does that mean? Larry will tell us. Larry founded LVA, which takes a novel approach to making marketing more inclusive after an eye-opening experience that made it clear there's been a breakdown in the data ecosystem, that the data marketers rely on often perpetuates stereotypes and bias, and that the only way to get at the heart of the problem is to go to the source. LVA has developed proprietary technology that helps eliminate bias and stereotypes in marketing. As Larry put it on the LVA website, to fight racism, there's a new bridge we should cross, data. We'll talk about how it works, but first, a quick plug for AdExchanger's upcoming industry preview event. It's around the corner on Tuesday, February 22nd, 2022, at the Time Center in New York City, and tickets are going fast. Join us to learn more about what to expect in the year ahead in data-driven digital media and marketing. We have a packed agenda with executives from Google and Meta, Nielsen, MasterCard, Snowflake, Kroger, Walgreens, Beam Suntory, Hearts and Science, and more. You don't want to miss it, seriously. Visit adexchanger.com/upcoming events to learn more and request your invitation. Hey, Larry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Allison. Great to be here.
So as listeners of this podcast know, I often like to start out with this question that I'm about to ask. So what is one thing about you that not a lot of people know and that you couldn't easily learn just from checking out your LinkedIn page?
You know, it's, well, I'm definitely more than my LinkedIn page. So that's, there's a lot of things. I think there's more to everyone than their LinkedIn page. But for me, what I think would not come across or not be easily discernible from my LinkedIn is, you know, I grew up in South Central LA in a very impoverished neighborhood and worked my way into corporate America. So I think, you know, oftentimes when you're a person of color or black person working your way through, you think, oh, that guy got in because he knows someone or he got his first start just, you know, because he's one of the elite people. You know, I worked my way from literally Florence and Compton in Los Angeles to Manhattan. So that's something people don't know as easily. And I speak fluent Spanish because I'm biracial. My mom is Mexican and my dad is African American.
Those are excellent facts. What was your first job?
My first job was in high school. In order to navigate through the world, from my perspective, really focusing on education is a gateway. It's not the only way. It's not like that's how you get, you know, like that's promised success. But for me, that was the way that I was able to apply myself in a way to become the person that I wanted to be. So I always did really well in school leading up to high school. And I wrote an essay for an internship competition to get an internship at Sony Pictures in Culver City, which is in Los Angeles. And I won. And so my first job was a PR marketing intern at Sony Pictures working on Poetic Justice, which was a Janet Jackson movie that I just thought about the other day.
Yes.
And an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie called The Last Action Hero, where I actually got to meet him. And so that was my first job. It's pretty spectacular, but one of the things that you get is just this moment where you're like, oh, living in LA, that's of course, you know, that's of course going to be your first job. But yeah, so That was my first job. It opened my eyes up to marketing, and I never knew, just based on my growing up, you know, my relatives were not like white collar relatives, and I never was exposed to a world of marketing. And when I got this internship, I had to take three buses, more than that, but in my mind, it's three major buses, and got to work way before everyone else. That was just how it was, because you couldn't tell when you were going to get to work. And it was just so cool, like the photography. And, you know, I'm like thinking to myself, I can't believe this is someone's job. And so I really fell in love with it, and I never let it go.
It's quite a double feature, Poetic Justice and The Last Action Hero.
It is definitely the gamut of entertainment. And I guess those are the perks of working at a studio. You get to work on a bunch of stuff.
And so now, I mean, fast forward, you are the CEO and founder of LVA. You founded in September 2020, I think. Yes. It was. And there was a story written in Ad Age, you know, at the time of launch, with a headline that referred to LVA as a quote unquote anti-racist agency.
Sure.
And I'm just curious what exactly that means.
You know, for me, it means, and I think this is pretty well documented also outside of my own interpretation of it, but for me, it's not just enough to recognize racism and avoid it. It really is about like recognizing racism and taking proactive steps to actually get rid of it, like eradicate it, break down this artificial construct of race, and start conversations with people regarding these, you know, stereotypes and tropes that we have been passed on through storytelling, through media, and through some, you know, some misinformation. So I think for me, LVA wasn't just an expression of a need for more Black representation in advertising, but more of an expression of how can I contribute to a less racist world. And so initially when I started LVA, I thought, okay, this is going to be about consulting and helping. And the more I got into it, the more I realized it's really not only about the conversations around race and understanding and inclusiveness. It's really about our tool sets and data sets and how we actually do our jobs. And so LVA gave me the freedom and the possibility to explore more solutions and become more focused on tools to drive anti-racism or drive more. I've evolved that thinking from anti-racism to inclusion, and inclusion just feels more about solutions. I think, you know, anti-racist was like my sentiment at that time, and inclusion is still that sentiment, but I think it takes a more sort of holistic view of it and more of a welcoming view rather than anti-racism. But I think they're both the same. In order to be inclusive, you really have to be anti-racist.
There's definitely something to be said for having a positive term as opposed to a negative term define what you're trying to do in a very different realm, but a very ad exchangery realm. I was talking to someone recently about cookie-less technology, mm-hmm. and she was saying, I wish they didn't call it cookie-less. I wish they called it something like identity forward or the future of identity, because you're defining yourself by what you don't have. It's a negative term. And, right. You know, I guess anti-racism, you're defining yourself by negativity as opposed to, you know, then thinking more widely and sparking the conversation like you're talking about and being more inclusive.
Yeah. I don't think they're different. They're just expressed in different ways that brings right. more connectivity. And that's the whole idea around anti-racism. But the idea at that time, and still is that it is not about comfort, really. It's about like proactive steps forward. And sometimes, and most times, that's uncomfortable, you know, from any kind of lifestyle decision you make. it's either losing weight or it's, you know, quit smoking. In this instance, it's let's not be racist and not be a racist society. And that's going to be tough. And it takes, I think, a lot of people involved in a point of like a meeting of minds on level ground. And I think that's the part that I feel like equality is such a word that's just tossed around in a way. But I think it is important to start at a level of equality, at least from an information perspective and understanding.
So I want to take a step back in time now, before LVA, back to the Mike Bloomberg presidential campaign, actually, which you were helping with.
Yes.
But then you realized that you weren't hitting African-American voters and the favorability scores weren't good. So I think you personally decided to dig in and find out why. And you discovered that the data required to effectively reach Black voters not only wasn't available, it just wasn't good data. It wasn't being modeled against the right personas and other issues. So let's go back there. I mean, what did you find when you started digging into the data?
Well, I'll go back one step further backwards and say, my expertise throughout my career has been moving out of that cubicle in Sony Pictures when I was 16 to just recently working at Warner Media on the HBO Max launch team. My whole world has been based on data insights, understanding how systems connect and how to drive big behavior movements across mass audiences into an engaging, profitable experience. So I know how to onboard data, how to bring it to life in marketing, and how that equates to winning. And during the time of leading up to the 2020 election, I was personally just really fired up about getting involved and how can I contribute to an administration change. And so when Bloomberg team approached me, I thought, oh, what better way? I'm a New Yorker. He's a New Yorker. I don't see eye to eye with him on a lot of his issues, but I did generally believe that he took a thoughtful, logical approach to things. And, I live in the city, so I know the impacts of both his policing tactics, but also the impacts of his business sense and how it actually, in a lot of cases, the city was run very, very well. And I thought, based on where we were, that would make the most sense. So when I got on board, it was really in a capacity to help use my big data, digital world knowledge and help move that forward. And when we were seeing that the scores from a favorability and awareness perspective within Black voters was not hitting it, and I thought, okay, this will be great. I know how to move the needle. I know this is a constituency, obviously, I'm close to because I am one. I think I can dig in here. And when I got to actually pulling the levers and the knobs that I'm used to, pardon the old school metaphor, but they weren't there. Facebook doesn't do any racial tracking. Google doesn't either. And so we're using these third-party model data to to bring in and onboard into programmatic spaces. And as I started to get into it more and more, I realized they're not just modeled, they're modeled on top of models. And so the actual probability was really, really low that we're hitting the right people. And so when I realized that, I thought, okay, great. I think we can get around this. Let's have some ideas of potentially, how do we contextually target Black audiences? And so brainstorms were pulled together, not only by me but by others on the campaign. And things got a little strange. I think with even the most well-intentioned, progressive-minded folks, you start to really get reductive around what do you think Black voters are into from a content perspective? And oh, well, they're Black women. We need to go on Wendy Williams and follow Wendy Williams fans. And it's like, well, not every Black person is into that. And so it's like in a vacuum of data and actual quantifiable certainty, then these stereotypes and internalized bias start to creep out as we start to, I witness people grasping at straws to actually connect with us as an audience segment. And so I thought, this can't be how things are done. This must be a gap in my professional knowledge. And, the campaign ended and I spent a fair amount of time between that and my next, between that and LVA, researching the landscape from a data provider perspective. And everyone I talked to at the big data provider said, oh, absolutely, we can give you Black audiences. And I thought, great, let's talk about your methodology. And you realize they're using geo mapping and saying, well, this is a Black neighborhood based on census, so there are Black people there. And it's like, well, what about the other people? And You know, there was just like so many gaps in how the industry approached identifying Black audiences. And I started with Black just because that's me. And that's part of my my personal identity. And felt like that was the least represented. And come to find out, it actually is. And when you take that model data and you actually start to pivot it down to Black audiences based on these really cool high level segments, the population, the sample size goes to like almost in, you know, like zero. And so you don't have the actual, they don't have the actual participants within their panels, within their testing to even gain the right insights to model against. So, you know, there were lots of holes. And so for me, the Black insights and data was a leaky bucket. And I think after George Floyd, people really started to understand that. And it became an imperative for a lot of corporations to connect with Black communities, and they couldn't. And so they scrambled around looking for solutions and making pledges to Black media. But it's sort of it became very clear that there was a paradox when it came to Black media. If you don't have the Black data to measure Black and have a captive Black audience sample, how can you measure out success against Black audiences? And thus, how do you create like this ROI on Black media? And so it becomes very self-fulfilling from there's not enough Black media, let's spend more money there. Well, we're not measuring them because we're not actually actively connecting with that audience in our panels. So there went the money. And so I think now the industry across the board is understanding how important the data and seeing Black people are. And as a Black person in the business, being seen and helping to create visibility for us is like my paramount and chief sort of goal right now, is having Black and people and other peoples represented in the data set. That is moving forward. You know, like the data is the insights driven culture isn't going anywhere. It's evolving. And I want to make sure that Black and Hispanic and Asian and other and multiracial identities are represented there, because that is the future. And we've seen what happens when you're missing from the data landscape. Our media doesn't get invested in. We don't get representation until we start protesting. But when you're in a capitalist society, you're in a world that we know about, which is all driven based on P&L performance. And in that P&L are data, our KPIs and data points that lead to success, and we're not represented there, we're not going to get our fair share. And so I'm taking a much more, just in my own philosophical understanding, a much more capitalist approach to how do I make this make sense and dollars for brands. And so that's what LAVA has been focused on. I know that's a long-winded answer, but that's how everything kind of came to be.
It's totally fine, because you've answered several of my questions. But one thing I wanted to talk about a little bit more is that like contextual issue, because like you were saying, one, you know, solution that was floated to the data problem when you were at the Bloomberg campaign was to contextually target Black people because the data for addressable campaigns didn't exist. And you know that just didn't work. But I guess why didn't it work? Definitely not everybody is a Wendy Williams viewer. But is there a way to do it where you have, you know, just a proper mix? Because some people watch Wendy Williams. I don't know. That's one example. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, contextual targeting is tough anyway. And it's funny that you mentioned cookieless at the beginning of this, but cookieless is a shift that in not only identity management, but also like, it really did take a lot of the heavy lifting out of like having to triangulate around context. That like when we first started from a marketing perspective, context really, really mattered. And as we moved into programmatic spaces, context became less of a driver and more, and identity took over. And we understand so much more that identity is truly the key. And so now I think, you know, it's a twofold answer to this question around, it's not just context. And I think context is about understanding that their interests beyond just what is the most reductive, stereotypical version of someone. So just because I'm Black doesn't mean that I'm interested in X. I'm probably watching everything. And it's important for the communications to be inclusive, because as a marketer, you understand that your content, and I think of advertising as content, your advertising content is really going to, you can't segregate it 100%. You can't say, okay, this ad is for Black people only. Only Black folks are going to see this, so let's do something different. And only white people are going to see this, so let's do something different. We know that these things cross over. There are tons of Black media where there are white fans, Hispanic fans, Asian fans, and vice versa. So it really does drive the point to me. The most logical point is, how do I make sure that my content, my advertising content, is resonant with most people that are watching it within my target, and also doesn't polarize and push away the audiences that are going to be exposed to this. And I think that is an important step in a marketer's review of content and advertising is, hey, I know that I'm trying to hit this demographic and this psychographic insight, but I've got these other constituencies that are going to see it, and I need to ensure that I understand how they would feel about this and make sure I'm not pushing them further away from my brand, or, you know, driving them to the point that they feel that they need to do something about it. That's where you get a lot of social media activism. But in the identity space, there's just so much opportunity for us to onboard more insights as it relates to not only, it's not just about like, I was born Black, but if I identify as Black, then I think that should be a part of my identity map. And I think those are, that's a big gap right now.
So we're going to take a break, a real quick one now, but when we're back, we're going to talk about some proprietary technology that you're working on, or it might be fully baked, that aims to help eliminate bias and stereotypes in marketing. So stick with us. We'll be back in a moment.
I'm AdExchanger Executive Editor Sarah Sluice, and I'm here with Michael Katz, CEO of mParticle, our sponsor this month. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
Michael, what's the role of a CDP, or customer data platform, in a modern marketing tech stack?
Our job is to help our customers accelerate time to data value. So the value that we unlock for our customers materializes only once data leaves the system. The question that teams inside our customer orgs have to address is ultimately how to maintain data trust as they scale their personalization strategies in the face of an ever-changing digital landscape. Since those changes create friction and inhibit success, they first have to think about adaptability before they start thinking about activation.
So let's talk more about this data point. What types of insights are CDP users able to gain from these platforms?
Types of insights that our customers look for mParticle to provide is really around the quality of data, the reliability and integrity of data. They want to understand the customer context in terms of where the meaningful moments are within the customer journey. Tie that all together to create a coherent and holistic customer data strategy, and then execute that by connecting their customer data to the different tools and systems that they use to run and grow their businesses.
How does mParticle approach this market to deliver value to customers?
At mParticle, we're focused on helping our customers navigate three core challenges. The first is maintaining and improving data quality. The second is having a layer of data governance, so being able to create rules around what data goes to what system to adhere to various privacy and regulatory concerns. And then the final piece is connectivity, making it really easy to connect data from wherever it may be created or reside to wherever they want to get it to, any system, API, or data destination.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Okay, and we are back. So before we talk about the technology that I teased before the break, what does LVA refer to? Because when you search for what does LVA stand for, none of the answers seem to apply on Google. I got left ventricular aneurysm, launch vehicle adapter, which has something to do with building spacecraft, and Luchtvaart Afdeling, which is the Dutch aviation department, apparently. You know, and I'm assuming none of those apply.
It's so funny because I am... I know because I've been talking for so much in this show, but I'm usually a very quiet person. I keep to myself, but so LVA was my attempt to put myself out there and be and lead with my chin, because not only was I talking about my own racial identity for the first time in my career, but like it's about me. And so LVA is my dad's initials. And I thought this is going to be great because it's my dad and it's me and, you know, we're the same. And so, you know, I'm Larry Vernal Adams Jr. I've never, ever said my full name out loud. and I can't believe I just did it on a big show, but I did. And I thought this, you know, how much more personal could this get than actually putting myself out there and making the business not just about business, but about me. And so it's my initials and my dad's initials, and more of my dad than me, but he was always LVA and he was in the military. So I just always remember it being like stitched on his clothes and on his uniform and stuff. So that it just brings up those kind of memories.
Oh, that's such a good origin story. I'm so glad it's not, you know, like an ad tech acronym or something. This is such a better story.
Don't worry. I have tons of that in the platform that I'm developing. So
let's talk about that actually. Sure. But before we talk about the homegrown technology solution that you're working on, a broader question.
Sure.
So to kind of set the scene, I mean, is there actually an equation for creating the quote unquote right types of ads? Like, you know, right as in effective, fulfilling, interesting, you know, fulfilling the brief, culturally sensitive, but also, you know, culturally relevant and resonant. It's a lot of things that would seem to fall under that umbrella, maybe all things that have to be true at the same time. And can you really apply math fully to get there?
So listen, I've been in advertising and marketing literally more of my life than I haven't been. And I realize how important creativity is. And I'm a steward of pure creativity. I don't often create it. I'm around it in a lot of ways. And it is magic to create something that is from nothing to a hit, or nothing to a viral moment, or nothing to a product that's in everyone's life every day. And so I believe that you cannot fully calculate your way into what's next and what's in the hearts and minds of people. The approach that I took from an algorithm build was, are there enough correlated signals from people that connect to each other? And could we use those to predict how people would respond? So I'm not trying to proactively, and I don't believe that math can fully proactively pitch creativity, but I do think that math can help aggregate large sets of signals, in this case, responses and language, into a way that actually can give you a sense of how people would react to it. And I think around race, there are a lot of commonalities even in amongst different ethnic groups. And then there are a lot of divergence. And, you know, to get the best sense of how to exactly measure that and drive predictable outcomes, you have to do a scaled scaled research. And that's what I've spent the last 12 to 16 months doing. And this is something that I know very well, because this has been in my wheelhouse of types of projects to initiate and to conceive of. And going out and asking tens of thousands of people about race, especially race and how it impacts their feelings towards advertising, was really fruitful. And we found a ton of bright signals of how people not only identify, self-identify, but then unconsciously how they process these racial topics. It's really fascinating that most people don't believe that they're racist, but then when it comes to actually processing data, they do it through an unconscious bias. And that was something that really bore itself out in the math and in the responses. And so it wasn't just me, by the way, like hiring PhDs, neuroscientists, behavioral scientists, and engineers to actually pull this together was required, because it takes a village of really smart people to identify and sort of map the cognitive understanding of people's processes as they sort through all this stimulus.
So in a nutshell, for I think I'm smart, but I'm not that kind of smart, not engineer smart. So the way I understand it, the product is a combination of like AI, machine learning, and like psychometric. So like measuring like personality traits and attitudes and
That's right.
knowledge to then go on and measure the level of inclusion in content.
That's right.
But I guess go one level deeper about how it works, and maybe share an example actually of, you know, the product at work.
Sure. So, you know, what we decided to do is there was like such an up sort of groundswell of like, okay, everyone understands marketing's bias. Everyone understands that advertising's been biased. We also now understand there is internal unconscious bias. It's like, okay, now what do we do with it? You know, and then what do we do to like combat this? And one thing I know as a Black professional or just a Black person moving in the world, there are like things that I experience that I know other Black people experience. And I know that, you know, regardless of class, we all sort of have these common experiences, and we process things maybe a little bit differently in the edges, but there are like some commonalities there. And so we went out without like a pure objective from a research perspective. We really went out exploring and trying to figure out, like, you know, we asked hundreds of questions at a time. We led thousands of conversations. And what we found was there was a lot of commonality around how people understood ideas and concepts. It mapped them to an internal sense of bias or stereotypes and authenticity. And so what the software does is it actually takes all that feedback that we got and puts it into its running algorithms, and it's using large scale natural language language AI. And it's training the AI to understand how these different personas would respond and present out their responses to these, you know, these key questions that we identified in our research. And it presents out scores and scores that are weighted, that are broken out by percentiles. So like, hey, you got this score, but that score actually equates to the low 10% or the highest 90% of bias. And so, or you know, and another metric we look at is authenticity. So it's predicting different personas' responses, and it's using natural language processing to do it. And so it, you know, the idea is like, so the reason we went with natural language processing as a baseline is my idea and my vision is that as we are creating content, as we are creating ideas, wouldn't it be great to know early on in the briefing stage, is there bias baked into this brief? We looked at cleaning products, and it talked about a clean home, and it was targeted to Hispanics. It's like, what does that mean? You know what I mean? And so, well, how would people interpret that? And we ran that type of scenario through our software, and, you know, looked at it top to bottom and found very explicit points of emotionality as well as senses of bias, and helped sort of write that ship before it even ever got to production or even into the into the script phase, because we're actually driving the strategy itself through this inclusion layer. So, you know, oftentimes people, especially in the creative world, will say, I can only be as good as the brief. You know, like, I will give you the work that is good as the brief. So inclusion has to start way before casting and production selection. It has to start at the actual origination of strategy. And that's where I felt was the least amount of influence sort of flowing through from an insights perspective, because not everything gets focus grouped. Not everything gets scrutinized like Super Bowl ads do. So you don't, you know, that's where most trouble starts. And so we wanted to create a tool that was actionable, that was science-based, and also easy to use. So language was the easiest to use and give the kind of feedback that is going to be the most useful in the process.
So you mentioned the Super Bowl, yes. And you were just talking about, you know, evaluating a brief before it even, you know, gets off the ground. But yes, in terms of the Super Bowl, you'll be evaluating the diversity of content ads at this year's Super Bowl through, you know, a lens of inclusion, authenticity, purchasing intent for multicultural segments, yes, right? And you're doing this live, yes, and also for the halftime show. So tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So like the premise of the software is we're taking stereotypes out of marketing. So that's why we call it the platform X Stereotype. It's at xstereotype.com. And X Stereotype is meant for clients and brands and agencies to get a sense of not only the bias, but the emotionality of it combined with senses of stereotypes to help guide the creative process and to help give clients and brands the evaluation tools they need to have an intelligent conversation around inclusion. And so right now I find that the gap is not only in the data, but also the evaluation. How is this creative actually working to move the needle? And you can't tell until the very end. And so what we decided was like, okay, let's get further up in the process and to sort of like an internal project that we thought we kicked off was, let's use our software and evaluate live the sentimentality, the bias, the authenticity of this year's Super Bowl ads. And also the halftime show, which is already getting a ton of crossfire conversation around like the lineup and the production companies and all this stuff. So we're like, let's just provide a tool for evaluation and start a conversation that's more driven around metrics that we can all sort of align to from an understanding perspective, and have a conversation that's not as subjective as most conversations around race and racial topics, and more quantitatively driven based on how people are actually responding across 27 different metrics. So that's the intent. And we're going to have a full rundown of how authentic were the ads perceived by different ethnic groups, multicultural groups. We actually saw, like, we're actually looking at them as they're coming out now. And we're seeing a lot of really interesting feedback. We're using our AI to do the predictive models, but in this case, we're actually validating it through more research. So we'll have more signals later, but we're actually getting focus groups and surveys done at the same time, just to make sure, hey, that we're not, you know, we're still training our AI, but just make sure everything's on the up and up. And what we're seeing is the AI is in a very high confidence level, predicting out what the surveys and the focus group participants are saying, which is, we see a lot of inclusion from a racial identification perspective, but the authenticity is just like really low. And so the comments that we're getting are, this feels almost like pandering. And, you know, we're getting a sentiment of like, I didn't make me feel better about these ads. So we'll have a full report on that. But what's really interesting is, I think in a time that where authenticity really matters, and in a topic where authenticity really matters, I think that advertisers are going to find it a bit tougher without tools like this and the ability to actually connect with audiences and more authentically with creators. It's going to be really tough going. It's not just enough to make sure you have a widening of the screen from a racial perspective. It's going to definitely take a widening and deepening of understanding.
You talked about having uncomfortable conversations, and as you're talking, thought occurred to me. It's uncomfortable maybe to have these conversations, but necessary. But in a way, there's a level of comfort because at least you have data to fall back on.
Yes.
And there's not like defensiveness necessarily, or you can get beyond that because Yes. You can look at the facts.
And we're not saying anything's right or wrong, right? Like that's the thing that I think is, there are things I personally feel like are wrong, and I will have the same, I will have a conversation about the same content with another, a Black friend. And they're like, well, they have a different point of view of something. And so this is where like data really helps guide this conversation. And I can only tell you how many times I've been the minority in the room that gets asked the question, hey, do you find this, this idea racist or like, does this offend you in any way? And then you're like, okay, do I say the truth or do I tell them what I think? How do I make this not about me getting fired or not getting promoted because I'm difficult? This takes it into a world where you can actually have KPIs and science-based metrics to evaluate creative that feels a little bit off limits for people. And I think this is the epitome of inclusion. We bring everyone into the conversation, level set and baseline understanding, and give the insights for unrepresented audiences. And so this to me just, it feels like, and I'm saying this selfishly because I've been working on it for the last year, but this feels like what I would need as a marketer, not just as a white marketer or a Black marketer, just as a marketer, like in this world of now knowing that most of my audience in the general market is multicultural, how do I bring myself to understand how they're going to perceive my content and my advertising content? And then how do I get them closer to buying? And that's the question. And it's not going to be based on my ability to not only based on my ability to target them, but I have to understand. And so these tools are far and in between, and we've been relying on old research methodologies and legacy research companies that have, there's a big one out there with Nielsen who's underrepresented us in the most basic currency of media, which is ratings, and they've come under fire. And it's like, okay, well, that's been the basis of all of our strategies, between them buying Simmons MRI, which is all the segmentation tools, all the things that marketers use has been faulty the whole time when it comes to audiences that look like me. And that's a shame and fixable. And that's why I picked AI, because we need to get there fast. Like we need to leverage technology that's available to us, but point it to an audience that hasn't been represented for so long. So I think that's, that to me is where we're at. And that's the moment. And that's the moment I'm trying to raise myself up to actually meet. And I think the whole industry will be there. We are at that moment. And I just, I pray that, and I am actually actively trying to help the industry get to the place where they're meeting the moment. And, right now there are some people that are really leaning in through their rhetoric or through their HR practices. But it's really a fundamental thinking differently about how you approach your business. And I feel really bad for those agencies and marketing service providers who are out there talking about inclusion and don't change the way they're actually doing their work, because they won't succeed in the future, because the future will have moved past them. And it's going to be really a different landscape, I think, in the next 3 to 4 years. I think, the heat around Black Lives Matter, all this talk around representation will go away. But what's not going to go away is the fact that the culture is shifting and becoming way more multicultural. And that's being borne out, that's being expressed in the census, that's being expressed in feedback, that's being expressed in every real life metric except for the marketing data. And so that's where I think those companies need to really lean in, and that's what we're providing.
And as a last question, which very much ties into what you were just saying, but you have agencies and brands, basically the ad industry at large, They all made a lot of pledges, you know, over the last couple of years to spend more with, you know, BIPOC publishers to support diversity, not only in their hiring practices, but also, you know, in their ad content, you know, trying to diversify their supply chain partners, all of this stuff. But if you had to grade the industry at large, just in terms of how it's doing, you know, on the diversity front, both hiring and authentic representation in advertising, and I know that means many things, what grade would you give?
I mean, it's hard. Grades are so difficult because without a basis, a scale of that's universal across, it's really hard to say you get an F because the rules are so ambiguous, so uncertain. There isn't a measurement out there that can actually help guide folks. So I'm going to say I'm going to give the industry at the overall top an F because we have not come together to establish holistically what is the benchmark, not just agency by agency, but as a category, how are we going to address this? And there's so many trade groups that and so many organizations out there that focus on, you know, there's a minimum threshold for research. There's a minimum threshold for ratings and all this stuff. But like coming together on like what is really going to be our sort of industry at large point of view and benchmarks for labor diversity at all levels, not just as a holistic view. Also, how are we going to measure our inclusion in the actual ads themselves, you know, and data, and how are we going to ensure proper governance of data that is inclusive? And so I think it's enough. It's been very productive. It's been very much a rhetoric driven time. It's very performative. We see that. And, you know, I'm just thinking about just this week, Spotify and this Joe Rogan thing, which is, you know, it's like, I know that people say he's not racist, but when you do racist things, that makes you racist, right? Like that's just the way it is. And saying the N-word, we know, is a racist thing. Calling a neighborhood the Planet of the Apes is a racist thing. He acknowledged that it's a racist thing. Then you have Spotify now saying, "Oh, we found $100 million. We're going to actually dig up and support Black or underrepresented creators." Well, their whole platform is full of underrepresented creatives, right? Like Black music has been driving Spotify globally. And now all of a sudden it's a priority. It's just not enough. And I think it's up to us as not only professionals at I call upon the employees to stand up against this because they all know better. This is the same thing I would say to the Facebook employees. I would also say to shareholders, this is not a viable business model where you can disaggregate yourself from your actual content providers and not align yourself to who's actually the bread and butter of your subscribers and still think that this company is headed in the right direction. I think there's a lot of, I think Spotify is just an example of a lot of companies and how they approach it. It's like crisis management. There's no more proactivity, but when people do the right thing at the outset, it doesn't take a whole, you know, that's where companies succeed. Inclusion, it drives profitability. This is not an expense. And so many companies, agencies and brands take inclusion and diversity as a crisis management, not as an opportunity to grow. And I think that mindset has to change. And I think that new leadership will change that. I think diversified leadership will change that. And I think that it's time for some changes at the top across a lot of these organizations. So, and I think it's coming, it's inevitable. And so, I say it's not about each individual company itself. I think it's all of us getting together and baselining and standardizing some practices and having some accountability and some integrity around not only inclusion from a racial perspective, but just even in gender and in other and all the ways of equality.
So I guess in sum, let's get comfortable having uncomfortable conversations.
That's right. And let's get comfortable asking questions and questioning our truths that we've lived with for so long, and that's questioning the data. And I think it's really scrutinizing who are you actually advertising to, and are you getting genuine answers?
Larry, LVA.
Thank you.
Thank you, Junior.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time.
Thank you so much. This is great. I really appreciate this. Thank you so much.
This episode was sponsored by mParticle. mParticle believes that better data results in better decisions and better outcomes. mParticle can cleanse, visualize, and connect your customer data from any source or system to any API. Postmates, NBC Universal, Spotify, and Airbnb use mParticle to accelerate their customer data strategies. Visit mParticle.com to learn more.